All right, Greaves, how does it feel to be in Colorado again?
It feels really, really good to be back in Colorado, actually.
Yeah. Have you been in the Boulder area?
Yeah. You know, growing up in Fort Collins, we would come up here. We would see a lot of the shows at the Fox and stuff. Actually, the first time I ever saw Atmosphere was at the Fox Theater when I was in high school and shit. So this is kind of cool for me because it's kind of like an iconic show for me because this is where I pretty much discovered him. And now, you know, now I'm his little biatch.
Perfect. That sounds awesome. So you were originally from Chicago, correct?
Yes, I was born in Waukegan, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
And then adopted by a family in Chicago, so I lived in Chicago. Yeah.
All right, so how does jazz influence your music and the procedure you go about making your music?
For me, not so much. I didn't really come up on the jazz as much as Budo did. Budo definitely did, and that does influence him. I'm speaking for him.
I see.
But for me, it was more of I was kind of raised more on the folk soul blues kind of stuff, and that really resonated with me and stuck with me. And I think that you can hear that a lot in my songwriting and my singing is very kind of bluesy. So yeah, but if you want to talk about jazz, you know, you can talk to the Budo.
I would love to hear from you.
Yes.
All right. So jazz.
Uh huh. Jazz.
Tell me about jazz. How you incorporate jazz in your music, or do you at all? I mean,
I don't necessarily think I consciously sort of sit down and try and make jazz a part of what we're doing, at least. But it's definitely my when I first started playing music when I was nine, I started playing trumpet, and for the first like 6 or 7 years, I played jazz, and that was kind of where I got any semblance of formal training and all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely kind of the unconscious foundation of everything I do. So that approach is there whether or not I'm sort of thinking of it or sort of trying to summon it. It's definitely like the foundation of my approach to music in general. So.
Beautiful. Well, so what was your first influence into hip-hop and rap, and what kind of pushed you into pursuing that as a career?
Wow. For me, like what really? Oh, really, really, dude.
That thing is
nice. For me, the first thing that really got me listening to hip hop was, you know, like Ice Cube and N.W.A. and West Side Connection and stuff like that. Because at that point in time, I was really into punk rock, and I thought that shit was funny as fuck. Like I loved. Well, I loved the controversy in that record because I was young and all that stuff, so I loved it. And then, you know, after listening to it more and more, I started to appreciate it, like, a lot more. I started to appreciate the tempos and the rhythms and stuff like that. And then I got into Wu-Tang, and then it was all over.
Of course. Ain't nothing to fuck with.
Yeah, yeah. I told Snooki that about her vagina on Twitter the other day.
It's nice of you.
I said that she should name her vagina the Wu-Tang Clan because it ain't nothing to fuck with unless you're an old dirty bastard.
That was clever. You know, I can respect that. I hope she can too.
Yeah, I hope she can too. Snooki, if you're listening, I hope you can too. I'm sorry, Poo Poo. So you know, Wu-Tang definitely got me.
What song?
Shit, that whole entire Killer Bees album made me want to fucking. Shit my pants. I loved that stuff. And then I just started listening to everything I could get my hands on. But at that point, I was really liking that East Coast gully rap shit, like Terror Squad and Mobb Deep and all that stuff, which is weird because I'm not an aggressive person, but I love some shoot you in the face music. I don't know why, but I love it. So for that, you know, that was all just fan stuff. And you know, I discovered Rhymesayers when I was probably about 16 and started listening to Slug and Atmosphere and Brother Ali and all those guys and really liked that stuff. And I think that Rhymesayers opened my eyes to a different kind of hip hop. And then I started listening to a lot more of that kind of music. And then I started, you know, writing. And I'd always been writing because I'd been in punk bands and stuff. And I'd, like, wrote the lyrics for my punk rock bands and stuff. And I liked it. It made sense to me. And it was easy for me to write, you know. So I started writing raps, and then I don't know when I ever decided to make it a professional thing. It was for me, it was always kind of a release. It was therapy. It was always something I could do. And once I started making my own beats, I didn't need anybody else. You know, I didn't need anybody else. So I'd sit in my house and I'd just make music, and then I had an album, and then I put it out, and it was crappy, and no one ever heard it, and they never will. And then I made another one, and then I made another one, and then I just let it sit at my house, and then I put out Irreversible in 2007, and it just took momentum. I ended up on the road with Atmosphere, and I've been working ever since. It just kind of became that way, so...
Well, I hear that you make all your own beats, all your own music. You're pretty much a Renaissance man, correct? So,
I used to.
Now I
got this freaking denim shirt wearing motherfucker right here.
Let me answer that question.
Do you start with the beats, or does he start with the raps?
Our process is actually really kind of haphazard. Like, I mean, he does a lot of the production himself too. We do some of it together, and I also kind of bring some of it to the table myself, and. There's no, like, prescribed formula, I think, that we have. Like, it's just kind of a whatever works, you know. Each song on a new album that we have coming out is, I think, was approached in a different way in terms of composition and writing and, you know. So there's a different approach depending on kind of what the song dictates, I guess.
Of course. How did you guys meet each other, and how did Rhymesayers become a thing for you?
The truth.
The truth. Nothing.
I'm like, I have the energy
truth.
For a yarn right now. We met in Seattle. You want to take this one? Okay. We met in Seattle. I probably first met him in Seattle in maybe 2005 or 2006. And you know, the scene there is kind of small enough that we were both running in the same sort of circles and knew the same people and were making music on the same stages and you know, it's one of those things where you just sort of run into each other. But we hadn't made music together until he was on the Atmosphere tour, actually, after he put out Irreversible and went on the road on the Everybody Loves a Clown tour, I believe. And I was living in Urbana, Illinois at the time, and the tour came through and played at a place called the Canopy Club there. And he hit me up and asked me to come to the show, and we sat down in the sort of disgusting rape room that was the backstage area and couches that probably shouldn't have been sat on. And that was the first moment that we had. Drank a beer and decided to make music together. When you got off that tour in, I don't know, it was probably a while after you got off that tour. I moved back to Seattle the summer after that. It was November when we sat down, but we didn't. We met at his Section 8 apartment in Seattle.
So they let me rent a Section 8 apartment. It was awesome. I saved so much money. Shit.
Oh, that's such a terrible thing. and the first time we got in the studio, we made a song called One of You, which is the song that we now finish our live sets with. And it went on 88 keys and counting, and what started out as a song turned into like an EP and turned into a full-length record. And then he asked me to come on tour with him for 2 weeks, and that was like fucking three years ago.
Broken side.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I don't know.
So you guys have been going steady ever since?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
Rings and shit, you know.
Right,
you can't
so.
See it, but it's there.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Beautiful.
The promise of a ring, yeah.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
weird.
So because I represent a pirate radio station, there's one question I have to ask.
Yar.
How do you guys feel about piracy of music? Has that posed a big issue for you?
No fucking comment. No,
oh.
I'm just kidding.
Oh.
you know what? I probably wouldn't be half as successful as I am without people downloading that Irreversible album. Now, I'm not rolling around in my money like Scrooge McDuck. No, I said McDuck. But, you know, I've gained a lot of fans, and I've been able to tour all over the place from it. And a lot of those fans will come up and be like, you know what? I downloaded your shit. Let me get every copy you got. Like, let me buy every album that you have. I'm sorry. And you know what? For every one of those people, there's probably 100 other people that aren't going to do that, but I don't really care. Like, they're still showing up to the shows. They're paying their admittance to get into the show. Where how mad do you want me to get, you know?
I just want you to be true, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't appreciate it sometimes, but I also understand it. Because I understand what it does for the artist, and especially for artists of my caliber, where it's like, I'm not making that much money, so I would really like new people to find out about my music and come to the shows, which is where I make most of my money anyways. So, so just come watch me rap in person.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I will be tonight.
Yeah, but you probably got in free.
Nope, I paid plenty for my ticket.
Damn.
I had to buy a ticket after it sold out.
Damn.
Yeah, $80.
And then, damn, that makes me look like a mega douche.
Don't. I'm willing to fork that up to see you. So
you are a fucking beautiful person.
Well, thank you, Graves.
Thank you.
All right. Would either of you care to shed some light on your creative process, perhaps with a past song that you came up with?
With a past song, or is there
a
particular
song?
Is there a particular song that you want to know about?
Well, my personal favorite, Don't Hold It Against Me.
I would never hold anything against you.
I'm not positive if you're on this one.
It's okay.
Unedible.
I'm not on this one.
You just go sit in the corner, Poodle. I got this one.
Tell me about it.
That's back when I was pretty much making music just to keep myself sane. And I had a little NPC, and I lived in this place called the Rapper Mansion. Because it was this huge 7-bedroom house and a bunch of fucking rappers lived in it, and it was a terrible place to live. And so I would sit in my room all day and I'd just make these beats and on my little MPC, and I had this little shitty computer that I would bounce it all out into, and the most jerry-rigged studio ever. And all my clothes were on the ground because I made my closet into like a little vocal booth and stuff. And I had a little crappy $99 Audio-Technica AT2020 mic. And that's what I recorded the vocals on in my closet. And, like, a room that is seriously, like, the size of that closet. It was really small. It just fit my bed and enough for me to get, like, a little tiny table in there to get my MPC on. And then my computer was on the ground. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, it was the smallest little room ever. And I was chopping up English dulcimer music. So I had this record I bought at Goodwill, and it was a bunch of dulcimer players just playing shit. And I found those chops in there. You know, I was just kind of needle dropping, and I found those chops, and I want to say that it was pretty late at night, and I want to say that I was dating, a girl named Mandy at that time.
Mandy.
Yeah.
All right.
But I can't truly recall those two things to my knowledge. I don't know. Maybe. I think I might have been dating a girl named Mandy, and I think that I did that really late at night. So, but yeah, I chopped that up, and I made it, and that was like the first song that I had really, really liked that I made for the batch of songs that I was working on Irreversible. And Irreversible was really just, I sat down with a friend and we picked out the best songs that I had made over the past like 3 years and made that record. But that was always one that I knew I wanted to do something with. So I went out and got my friend who made crappy videos, and now he makes great videos. But, you know, we shot that video and it was weird and it was crappy. And I'm moving my arms around a lot and people keep calling me a faggot on YouTube when they see it. And all that stuff. But it's cool because I do look like a dumbass in that video. But, you know, so I shot that video, put it up before I even released the record and everything. So I really liked that song. But I don't play that song anymore.
No? Is there a reason?
Because Budo gets like hella mad at me.
Completely understandable.
It's a source.
Because he also was dating a girl named Mandy at the same
late
time.
At night. I was also doing things at night later in the day when it got dark. And
did they have to do with Mandy?
They did.
I see.
Doing Mandy late at night.
So that's why you were making music.
Because he was doing it. He was boning my bitch.
I see. That explains the angry arm movements.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's the whole story.
There you go.
So
ask us another one. One that we can take part in together.
Well, the two of you on tour together, what's one thing that you guys can't leave without? What's one possession the two of you have to have?
CJ.
Yeah?
Yeah, that guy.
Tell me about CJ.
CJ is the master of the arena. Okay. And the arena can mean a lot of different things. It can mean...
For us, it's everything.
It's everything. It's our world. He's the master of our world. He drives his places. He runs sound. He's a fucking genius sound man.
He can fight multiple men at once.
He can also consume, like, the most heinous cocktail of different substances I've ever seen a human being put in their body and still fucking function perfectly.
How many poops did you take today?
And you've been awake for 5 hours. Oh, Jesus. So, yeah, so that guy.
And what is it that you two are working on now? And when will it drop?
Well, what... Bring! What we're working on right now, actually, what will drop soon is... it's tough on radio, though.
All right.
The new album, called Together Apart, is coming out on June 21st on Rhymesayers Entertainment. And we made that record over the last 2.5 years, 2 years.
Wow.
It took a long fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're both unbelievably proud of it and really, really, really excited to put it out and share it with people. And we've been playing some of the new songs on this tour and getting kind
Lovely.
Of a cool response. And
well, look forward to hearing them.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's what's kind of happening in our world.
Are you allowed to tell me what your favorite track is, or is it too soon?
No, we're promoting this record.
All right.
We'll talk all about this record.
Tell me about this Together Apart,
dropping June 21st, Together Apart. My favorite song is going to kind of be in the realm of why I'm excited to play the Fox Theater with Atmosphere, because this is, you know, like I said, this is where it's the first time I ever got to see him live and stuff like that.
Full circle.
Exactly. So I have a song on the record that is very full circle for me, and it features one of my favorite artists, which is Brother Ali.
Oh, wow.
And that song's called Tragic. And for me, it's the topic of the song is kind of about how even the things that you've wanted your whole entire life can still kind of drive you a little crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for me to be able to kind of touch on that subject with somebody that inspired me to want to do these things is really cool. And definitely, like, his verse is so fucking amazing. It gives me chills down my spine. But the way that kind of worked out was, like, you know, we got a tour Europe with Brother Ali, but we had never met him before. We kind of just, we pulled some classy shit and we're like, we knew the promoter that did all the Scandinavian dates, so we got put on every date, and he didn't have an opener for the rest of his tour, so we're just like, can we come with you? We're here, can we come with you? And he's like, yeah, that I can't say no to that. So he brought us with, and, you know, we really got to know each other and stuff like that, and you know, like a lot of talking and stuff, and the beat was actually made on that tour in a van in Norway. Budo made it, and like we got lost on our way to Stavanger, Norway, on some crazy ass like snow trail.
We all thought we were gonna die.
Yeah, we had to backtrack like 4 hours and everything. It was nuts. But so he made that beat, and then I got home and kind of wrote that song, and I sent it to Brother Ali, and immediately like fired back with the verse, and for me I was just like, this is the coolest shit to me. Like, no matter what I'm doing or what position I am in my life or in my career, that shit is still cool as fuck to me. That, like, I could still do a song with somebody that I look up to so much, even if they are a label mate, even if, you know, even if it's Budo. Like, I still getting to make music with Budo and everything like that. Like, I love that dude's beats when I first heard him back in 2005, you know. Like, now I get to make records with him. Like, everything is really coming full circle, and that song in particular for me, when I hear it, is kind of like, I don't want to say trophy because it sounds selfish.
A realization, perhaps?
Yeah, but it's an accomplishment. It's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I really like that song because
Great.
Of that.
All right.
What about you, Dubo?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're all my favorites. I mean, Tragic's incredible to me because, as you said, like just this process of I think we both feel so unbelievably lucky to be in this position that we're in. It's surrounded by people that we like. When your idols become your peers, and not your peers in the sense that you're equal to them, but your friends. Like, you're surrounded. I mean, my friends now are people that I've looked up to my entire life, and that's I'm so lucky. So and that song Tragic really
is representative of that being like reality, you know. So it's a fucking cool song too.
Is it a happy song?
It's not a sad song.
Okay.
Sad ass song. Yeah. On the record, but there's some problems.
I think my favorite song on the album is actually it's On the Rocks, which is going to be the first, like, we've dropped two singles leading up to On the Rocks, which is like the first full single, and that'll come out soon. Well, I guess it's already out. It's streaming somewhere on the internet. But the actual video and all that stuff will come out soon. And to me, that song really, like, represents Greaves, like, progression as an artist from, like, it's all singing. And it's, like he was sort of talking about earlier, it's in a very sort of bluesy, like, soulful vein. And it's a song that he made entirely himself, and it's fucking, like, it's an incredible song, and it's a song that, like, is really going to resonate with people beyond, like, this kind of standard hip hop, like, world. That I think he's singing like an angel. So I think that song is going to surprise people, and it's like a song that you think you've heard before. Like, it's one of those songs that, like, you can't believe someone hasn't written it yet type of songs. So that's my favorite song.
That's awesome. What kind of software do you use?
Whoa. To browse the internet?
Make the beats.
Somebody needs to see the power.
I use Logic.
Okay.
Pro Tools.
Apple, if you're listening, I use Logic.
Pro Tools.
And dump a lot of live instruments and things into there. Logic's kind of the center of everything. And for Greaves, he produces in Pro Tools. And then we end up dumping everything out of Logic into Pro Tools to mix and track vocals. So.
Sweet.
Bit of an obtuse process, but yeah.
All right.
Bro tools.
Yeah. Bromance, bro tools.
Yep.
The two go hand in hand, I'm
they
sure.
Do indeed.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah.